Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto will tell us about a new website that tells about the political beliefs of some college professors. Then, you will hear Words and Their Stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Anna Mateo will bring us the first of her three-part series on the many American English expressions using the word ice. And as we do every Sunday, we will present The Making of a Nation. Today, we will tell you about the 1950s in America. It was a time when the population of the United States was growing as never before. So, you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So, let's get started. Here's higher education correspondent Pete Musto.
A new American website is seeking to identify and list professors it claims support extremist ideas. The website, called Professor Watchlist, was launched in November. It is a project of Turning Point USA, a nonprofit group that supports values such as limited government and free market economies. These values are often connected to American conservatives. How does Turning Point decide which professors hold extremist beliefs? Matt Lamb is the Director of Constitutional Enforcement and Transparency at the organization. Lamb says he and others search for news stories about professors expressing beliefs he says are outside the American mainstream. By definition, mainstream means a direction of an activity or influence. Most of the professors on the list are reported as having talked, written, or taught about subjects related to the progressive movement. This includes support of gun control laws, the idea that human activities are to blame for climate change, and criticism of the free market system. The Higher Education Research Institute operates through the University of California, Los Angeles. The group studies issues related to higher education. In 2014, it found that 60% of U.S. college professors identified themselves as liberal or politically left-leaning. Lamb says conservative-thinking students often feel like they have to hide their political opinions from their professors and other students. He says many of the professors on the list try to silence conservative students in their classrooms. The aim of the website is to let students know which professors hold opposing beliefs. Then, students can either avoid taking classes with those professors or better prepare their own arguments against them, Lamb says.
For example, if you're a pro-life student, you probably don't want to take a class with the professor at University of California, Santa Barbara, who punched a pro-life student and got 3 years probation for it. It's probably something you're going to want to know going into a class. But for the most part, too, we also encourage our students, if they feel comfortable doing so, to push back and debate these ideas in classrooms.
Some critics have compared the website's list to the activities of former U.S. Senator Joseph McCarthy. During the 1950s, McCarthy tried to publicly identify American citizens that supported communist teachings. Many of the people he identified suffered damage to their public reputations and careers. But Lamb rejects this comparison. He says Professor Watchlist does not investigate the private lives of professors. And the information used to identify people named on the list is all publicly available. The website lists some professors because of opinion pieces they wrote for newspapers or comments left on social media. If they did not want their beliefs made public, they should not speak about them publicly, Lamb says. Also, one-sided political arguments do not belong in the classroom, he adds. The U.S. Constitution protects the free speech rights of professors and the website organizers, says Susan Kruth. She is with the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education. Her foundation fights for academic freedom on college campuses. Kruth says the history of lists like the one on Professor Watch List is dark. But she adds that professors should accept criticism and debate.
One of the most important things that people can do is just make sure that they understand the line between what's part of a healthy conversation and what is not part of a healthy conversation, what is really censorship and punishment.
The website does not support extreme harassment or try to punish professors for their beliefs, Kruth says. Unless it does so, the website remains a welcome part of political debate. I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Here's Ana Mateo.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. On this program, we explain how to use common words and expressions in American English. Today, we are going to celebrate the coming of winter with expressions related to cold and ice. And we will do that with a story, a mystery story. This is part one of a three-part series. Our story begins on a distant mountaintop. It is the dead of winter. Outside, the wind is howling. Snow mixed with freezing rain has made the roads unsafe for travel. Even walking outside is dangerous. So, the four characters of our story are stuck indoors at the Ice Castle Inn. Like the name suggests, the inn is an old castle, but now it is a vacation spot for bird watchers. these four people are strangers. The only thing they have in common is a shared interest in snowbirds. But for now, they all have put their birdwatching plans on ice. That is to say, they must postpone their plans until the winter storm passes. What they don't know is the violent storm outside is just the tip of the iceberg. In other words, more danger exists, but they cannot see it. But now let's get in out of the cold. As we enter the Ice Castle Inn, we meet our group of travelers. They are all having a hot drink as they gather by the fireplace. First, there is the teacher, Madeline. She is in her late 20s and teaches skiing and cold weather survival skills at a private school for girls. Her neat dark hair frames her round, healthy face. Her appearance is plain, but she is in great physical shape. She is a quiet woman. When she speaks, her voice is low and uncertain. You may think she is shy, but think again. Underneath her shy exterior, she is calm, cool, and collected. If she stares at you with her clear green eyes, you can sense her powerful, extreme calm. Her ability to control her reactions makes people feel afraid. It sends shivers down their spines. Then there is the athlete, Vincent. He is in his early 30s. Handsome and active, he talks to anyone and everyone. He has an easy manner, and people like him instantly. He's the type of man who could sell ice to an Eskimo, meaning he could talk you into anything. At first, he seems to be a very cool, easygoing sportsman. But talk to him more, and you realize that something is missing, namely, feelings. Those who know him best say he has ice water running through his veins. Nothing seems to upset or emotionally move him. Next is the actress, Sylvia. She is in her mid-40s and is extremely attractive. With her ice blue eyes, pale white skin, and fine clothing, she doesn't seem like the outdoorsy, bird-watching type. Her personality runs hot and cold, friendly one minute, unfriendly the next. You never know what to expect. The one thing that is constant about her is the gold locket she wears around her long, thin neck. She never takes it off and often holds it tightly to her chest. Finally, there is Major Jack, an ex-military man. His age is hard to guess, perhaps 50-something? He has a strong jaw and thick black hair. The lines on his face make him look older, but even more handsome. Some men are just lucky that way. He seems like most military men, strong and silent. William Shakespeare might even call him a cold fish, unfeeling and unfriendly. But at the same time every day, as the sun goes down, he stares out the window into the storm with great sadness in his eyes. It is at these times he seems like a man left out in the cold, ignored and alone. That is our small group of traveling birdwatchers. As the days pass, the snow only falls harder on the Ice Castle Inn. The landline phones no longer work. Neither do cell phones. No rescue vehicles have come to clear the roads. They are truly snowed in. With each passing day, they become more and more suspicious of each other. They all wonder the same thing. Why are the others really here? Answers will have to wait. I'm Anna Mateo. Join us next week for part two of The Mystery at the Ice Castle Inn.
Thanks, Anna. Now, we present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we climb into our time machine to visit the United States in the 1950s. As Steve Ember tells the story, we will find a nation whose population was growing as never before, a nation where the popular culture of television was both reflecting and influencing its lifestyle.
But it was also a nation that believed it was on the edge of nuclear war. Americans were happy to put World War II behind them. The war ended in 1945. People were hopeful. They thought the world would be peaceful for a while. By 1950, however, political tensions were high again. The United States and the Soviet Union were allies in World War II. But after the war, they became enemies in what came to be known as the Cold War. Communists took control of one Eastern European nation after another. The Soviet Union, led by Joseph Stalin, strengthened its armed forces. However, the United States thought America alone possessed the most powerful weapon of all, the atomic bomb. But in 1949, a United States Air Force plane discovered strange conditions in the atmosphere. What was causing them? The answer came quickly. The Soviet Union had tested its own atomic bomb. The nuclear race was on. The two nations competed to build weapons of mass destruction. A doomsday clock on the cover of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists warned of a growing danger of nuclear destruction. Members of that group were afraid of what science had produced, and even more afraid of what it could produce. By 1949, the time on the doomsday clock was 3 minutes to midnight. In 1950, North Korea invaded South Korea. The Korean War increased efforts in the United States to develop a weapon even more deadly than the atomic bomb. That weapon was the hydrogen bomb. The Soviets were also working to develop their own hydrogen bomb. Some Americans built bomb shelters in their backyards, hoping to have a safe place for their families in case of a nuclear attack. Other Americans, however, were tired of being afraid. After years of sacrifice, they wanted to enjoy the good life in a growing economy. 1952 was a presidential election year. Americans elected Dwight Eisenhower, a military hero of World War II. The years after the war produced the baby boom generation. In 1950, there were 24 million young children in America. By 1960, that number was 35 million. More families meant the need for more houses, and bigger families needed bigger houses. In 1950 alone, almost 1.5 million new homes were built in America. Most of these new houses were located in suburbs, the areas outside cities. People moved to the suburbs because they thought the schools there were better than city schools. They also liked having more space for their children to play in. More space meant children had room to lay out electric train sets. In a lot of American homes, playing with electric trains was an activity that brought the whole family together. Television ads for Lionel trains even featured baseball great Joe DiMaggio.
Lionel trains proudly present the Joe DiMaggio Show, starring the Yankee Clipper Joe DiMaggio himself.
The late 1950s brought the Barbie doll and a big circular tube of colorful plastic called the hula hoop. People had to learn to move their hips in a circular motion, like a hula dancer in Hawaii, to spin it around their body. Hula hoops became hugely popular in America. Also popular was the poodle cut, not for dogs, but for women who wanted to look stylish. They fixed their hair into lots of small curls, like the hair on a poodle. Actress Mary Martin had made the poodle cut famous in the musical South Pacific. That play opened on Broadway in New York in 1949 and ran into the early 1950s.
A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend.
In Hollywood, one of the biggest movie stars of the 1950s was Marilyn Monroe. She starred in films like Gentlemen Prefer Blondes in 1953. Her platinum blonde hairstyle also became popular among American women.
I woke up this morning, you know, and the sun was shining, and it was nice, and all that type of stuff. I said, no. Boy, this is going to be one terrific day.
Another famous actor was James Dean, best known for the 1955 movie Rebel Without a Cause. That same year, he died in a car accident at the age of 24. In literature, there were writers and poets who came to be known as the Beat Generation. These included Jack Kerouac, Gregory Corso, and Allen Ginsberg. To them, much of life in 1950s America was empty and meaningless. The painter Jackson Pollock represented a spirit of rebellion in art. Pollock would drop paint onto a canvas. What did his works mean? People had to decide for themselves. In music, the rebel was Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll.
You know I can be found.
Elvis was a 21-year-old truck driver when he sang on television for the first time. Some parents and religious leaders thought he was a bad influence. They thought the way he moved his body to the music was too suggestive. But young people screamed for more. They listened to Elvis's music on records, on the radio, and on the television program American Bandstand. American Bandstand became the most popular dance party in America. Every week, young people danced to the latest songs in front of the TV cameras. But it wasn't all rock and roll.
Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time.
Whether on bandstand-type television programs or at local record hops or at home, young Americans and their parents dance cheek to cheek to romantic ballads as well. Television in the 1950s included dramas acted live every week. And there were quiz shows and game shows and comedy programs. If Elvis was the king of rock and roll, Lucille Ball was the queen of comedy. During the 1950s, millions of Americans watched I Love Lucy. Lucille Ball starred with her husband, Desi Arnaz. They played Lucy and Ricky Ricardo. Ricky is a Cuban band leader in New York. Lucy is a housewife who wishes she could be famous like her husband.
What do I have to do?
You're going to get me back on the television show.
How?
I don't know how. But if you don't...
All right.
I will,
Ricky. I'll get you back on the show. Don't even think of what you'll do if I don't.
Lucille Ball and I Love Lucy were both big influences on generations of entertainers and TV comedy producers. Variety shows offered a mix of entertainment. Americans watched shows hosted by comics like Milton Berle, Jackie Gleason, and Sid Caesar. Ed Sullivan was not a comedian, but for years, his show brought new acts into American homes every Sunday night. Television shows were all in black and white. But one night in 1953, Americans got their own time machine glimpse into the future of TV. It happened with an announcement during Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows.
This is Richard Harkness in Washington. This week will long be remembered in the annals of television. For on Thursday, December 17th, the Federal Communications Commission approved compatible color television.
That meant that owners of TV sets could still watch programs broadcast in color, in black and white, instead of having to buy a new set. Color TV's popularity grew quickly, and the prices of color TVs came down, meaning more color TVs in American homes and more programs produced in color.
The following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
During the 1950s, most of the people who appeared on television were white. If black actors appeared, they were usually in jobs working for white people. But in real life, a civil rights movement was beginning to gather strength. Legal battles were fought to end racial separation, especially in public schools. In 1954, the United States Supreme Court made a historic ruling. The case was known as Brown versus the Board of Education. The court ruled that the requirement in some states for racially separate schools was unconstitutional. The court rejected the idea that schools for black students could be separate but equal to those attended by white students. By the 1960s, the civil rights movement would shake American society. Dwight Eisenhower was president for most of the 1950s. He faced the problems of communism, nuclear threats, and racial tensions. Ike had a calm way of speaking to the public. Many Americans saw him as a fatherly president. They thought that even in a dark and dangerous world, everything would be all right. Tomorrow, we will tell you about the Cold War. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s, and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. Well, that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.